Good morning and welcome to Nachyomi. We are about to start now the new Sefer Amos. Amos is actually the third Sefer of the Trei Asar, of the 12 minor prophets, or called minor because their Svarim are a little shorter. And we really have a lot to anticipate. There's a lot to look forward to in the Sefer. Today we're going to focus on an overall introduction and then we'll jump straight into the Prakim. There are 9 chapters in all of Amos, so it is a shorter Sefer. It'll take us just under 2 weeks to get through at a perek a day for 5 days a week. And let's try to get a sense of who Amos is and what he was about. So the Gemara tells us in Psachim on Daf Pei Zayin Amud Aleph that there were 4 Nevi'im who were contemporaries who lived at the same time. And they were Hoshea, Yeshayahu, Amos, and Micha. We've met 2 of them already. We met Hoshea and Yeshayahu previously in Tanakh. And Amos is a contemporary. Now, Yeshayahu was actually primarily talking to the southern kingdom, to the kingdom of Yehuda, in the split monarchy of Israel. However, Hoshea and Amos are both speaking to the northern kingdom. And it's fascinating that Amos and Hoshea themselves seem to be talking to the same people at the same time. Who are these people? When is this actually occurring? So, the one way we're looking at this is, after the kingdom of Israel split off from the kingdom of Yehuda, in the times of Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, Yeravam ben Nevat takes the control of that, and splits away. He sets up border control. He puts up Egle Zahav, a golden calf, in the top and in the north and the south to prevent them going his people going to the base of Migdash. This lasts a number of generations, and there's not too much lineage going on. First, Yeravam has a son Nadav that's very short lived. Baasha wipes out his family. There's a number of quick successions until finally we have Omri. Omri has Achav and Achaziahu in Yehoram, and that is a 4-line generation, which ultimately is wiped out by Yehu. Yehu starts off as a good king in the north. He wipes out the king in the south and the north. He takes control of the north. He wipes out Avodah Zorah, but ultimately he's not fully there. Everything recedes back into Avodah Zorah, and he has 4 generations from him. So again, another 4-generation lineage, resulting in his son Yehoahaz, the grandson Yoash, and finally his great-grandson, whose name is Yeravam ben Yoash. Yeravam ben Yoash is during the time period that we're looking at. So if you're thinking about it, really, with the exception of a few blips here and there, there was really only Yeravam and his son, a few little rebellions in between, then Omri leading to the Achav generation, which was 4 generations again, and then we have Yehu and 4 generations from him. That is sort of the general history of the northern kingdom. It's in the 4th generation of Yehu, this Yeravam ben Yoash, or sometimes called Yeravam II, who is the king of Israel, and it's a very strong time. He rules for 41 years. That's a colossal amount of time. His contemporary in the south is Uzziahu or Azariah, and both at this time is a time of great peace. There's calm, there's extended boundaries. Yeravam extends the boundaries northwards, quelling all the enemies. And Uzziah HaMelech in the south quells them down southwards. There's a great amount of success at this point in the career. And what that means to say is it also comes with opulence. It comes with arrogance. So we're going to see the voice of Amos is going to be one dealing with a very successful population, a very military successful population, and trying to break their arrogance. That's going to be the voice we hear. It is interesting that Hoshea, who does speak to the same people, seems to prophesy a longer time than Amos, because he already starts talking about a depressed nation in the north, about people who are facing rebellion after rebellion after rebellion, and enemies coming in, which seems to be what happens after Yeravam dies. We don't hear so much about that in Amos. So Amos is primarily focused on the great period, the period of success and the challenges that come with that. So that's generally the perspective of when he lives. We are also able to cross-reference when he lives, because we're going to see that he talks about a specific episode called the Ra'ash. There's some sort of earthquake, some sort of natural disaster which occurs, and he starts prophesizing 2 years before that. So we're going to be able to cross-reference that. We see Zechariah mentions that later on, the notion of this Ra'ash, which we know is sometime during the middle of the reign of Yeravam. Okay, how is the structure of the Sefer work? So there's many different ways of looking at it. The Barbanelda divides into 5 or 6 sections. The way the Da'at Mikra organizes, the Da'at Mikra is a compendium of later academic Mephoreshim and the classic Mephoreshim on all of Tanakh, and it's written by different editors. The editor of this particular Sefer is actually a person called by the name of Amos Chacham. So Amos Chacham has a pirush on Sefer Amos. He probably wanted to specifically talk about the one of his namesake. So he divides into four sections. The first two prakim are prophecies to the nations around them. Section two is Perek Gimel to halfway through Perek Hay, which talks of all the thematically collected ones which start with the word Shimu. Listen, 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 listen. And then section three is all the ones which have a sort of hay at the beginning, an accusation, a specific start, which is from Perek Hay to the second half to Vav. And finally, the last section, which are visions, which are Zion to Tess. Now, let's take a few basic perspectives into Amos himself. What does his name mean? So the word Amos can relate to the word burden. And so there's a few options as to what it could mean. One is that we do see later on in Dira Yomim Beis, Perek Yud Zayin, there's a person by the name of Masya, which means to say the burden of Hashem or on Hashem, which means to say that, or could be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is supporting us, right? So we are the burden of Hashem, Hashem supports us. So it might be that Amos is a shortening of the word Amasya. There is no other Amos in Tanakh. Then maybe it's a shortening of Amasya and it's referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu supporting us, which is therefore a notion of trust. The Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah gives another possibility in Perek Ches, in the second Piska, which says that it could mean that he is a burden because people would taunt him. We're going to see later on in Perek Zion, people taunted him about the way he spoke. Maybe they would say that the way that he spoke was burdened. So they're actually mocking him, and it's a negative reflection on the way he spoke. Another option as to what his name could mean. Now, let's move from the name into his background. What do we know about him? So one thing we know about him is that he describes himself as a very simple person. He says he's not a Navi, he's not a son of a Navi. You don't hear his father's name in the Sefer, which Chazal tell us is an indication that his prophecy was self-earned. It wasn't that he was endowed from a spiritual upbringing in the same way. And also he calls himself, the very first pasuk is Divrei Amos Asher Hayah Banokdim Mitakoa. So he was a shepherd of sorts. He was involved in livestock in Tekoa. So he sounds like a very simple kind of person. Where is this Tekoa exactly? Where he says that he lives in this place called Tekoa. We know of a few people who come from there. There's a Isha Tekois. There was a woman from Tekoa who Yoav uses to spin a marshal to David HaMelech, which is very fascinating. But what do we know of this place? So the Radak tells us that it actually is a place in the northern Galilee, the area of Asher, which means to say that he was a native of the place he was prophesizing. However, really, the diatomic crust suggests that it's really hard to say that because we know there is a Tekoa, and even today there's a Tekoa, which is right near Bethlehem, just outside of Jerusalem, which would mean it was to be in the southern kingdom. Now, the difference between these different speculations actually yields a practical outcome, and that is, if Amos was from the Upper Galilee, that means to say he's speaking to his brethren when he's rebuking them in his prophecy. If he comes from Tekoa, which is right by Beis Lechem, that means to say he's an outsider. So we're going to have to remember this as we get to Perek Zion and Amatzia is trying to chase him away. It could be what Amatzia is trying to say to him is that when he's rejecting him, he's saying, look, you belong in the south. In the south, there are lots of people who hate us. But don't talk to us. Don't come up here and rebuke us. Go to the people in the south and write your op-eds there and don't talk to us. So if he's an outsider, you can hear perhaps the xenophobia setting in a little more, specifically if this was from Tekoa. Finally, the last thing which is worthwhile noting over here is that how do Nevi'im get Nevuah in the first place? And Abar Benel, in his introduction to the Sefer, does make a very interesting point. And that is that he quotes the Rambam, who says that Nevuah, prophecy, comes to a person, and Nevuah is in fact a natural process, which means to say a person can earn it. They need to work really hard at their midos, at the way that they conduct themselves, and at their wisdom, at their intellect. And if a person spends a lot of time working on themselves, they will naturally be endowed with intellect. The Rambam believes that it's an innate process which a person can develop. It's sort of like a spiritual and intellectual gym that a person can develop. Whereas the Kuzari, Rav Yehuda Alevi, the later contemporary of the Rambam, says that no, it is actually a supernatural process. It is not a natural process, which is why you see certain limitations which don't make sense if it was just natural. So, for instance, prophecy only arrives at Jews, with a few exceptions of one or two others. Number two is it only happens in Eretz Israel. So how could it be limited to people or limited to place if it's a naturally ingrained attribute of human beings? And therefore, says the Kuzari, it is actually a supernatural endowment which is endowed specifically by HaKadosh Baruch Hu relating to his people. And that therefore explains something, because when Amos in Perek Zion says, he says to Amatziah, he says, Lo Navi Anoichi, V'lo Ben Navi Anoichi, Ki Voiker Anoichi. I am not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet. I am simply a shepherd. Which means to say that he is saying that I don't really deserve prophecy. And you see from here a fascinating thing. Like the Kuzari, as the Abarbanel points out, that Amos was not your regular Navi, not the person who spent their life engrossed in study and intellectual and spiritual and self-betterment pursuit. We're talking about a person over here who was a regular Joe. And this regular person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed with prophecy because he needed to be the vehicle, he needed to be the platform for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's word to that generation. Without much further ado, this now opens up the door to be able to learn it fully in depth, and I look very much forward to doing that with you. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.